Before Ramadan left Montreal, Prabhupada asked him to send the Srimad Bhagavatam 2nd and 3rd canto manuscripts from the closet in his New York apartment. By October, as soon as Teachings of Lord Chaitanya was printed, he would have the manuscripts ready for a dying poem. Speaking to Brahmananda and others in his room, Prabhupada charged them with the organization of book sales. There would be no scarcity of books, but his disciples would have to sell them. When Prabhupada had been alone in India, he had printed, gathered statements from scholars, advertised, and distributed his books. But now he was depending on his disciples. They recognized the importance of his books, but they had no ideas or means for distributing them. Prabhupada assured them, however, that by applying his instructions and trusting in Krishna for results, they would be successful. Prabhupada and Ramananda discussed plans for starting their own printing press, perhaps in Montreal. With the cost of printing so high, Prabhupada wanted some of his disciples to learn the techniques of book publication. He suggested that one of his disciples in New York learn to run a press, and some of the girls learn to compose type. Thus, in the future, he might be able to start his own press in some convenient location. Srila Prabhupada was always considering the practical means how to spread Krishna consciousness. Here he is as Vaishnava Acharya, absorbed in discussing setting up a printing press and how it would work. Srila Prabhupada was so expert at seeing what needed to be done for Krishna at the time and doing it later. After some years of having a press in New York, and with the change in the printing prices, Srila Prabhupada would advise, don't set up a press in the future, be too much trouble. So he was always in tune with what the practical realities were. Needless to say, Srila Prabhupada was never with his head in the clouds, as the expression goes. Despite Prabhupada's plans for preaching in Europe, obtaining permanent residency in the United States and Canada, printing his books, and starting a press, his life remained regulated and simple. He would give Srimad Bhagavatam lectures in the temple and daily see guests in his room. Constantly thinking, writing, chanting, and speaking about Krishna and how to spread Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada was the driving force of a revolutionary movement. Yet he mostly stayed at home, spending much of his time alone or in simple domestic dealings with his servants. One quiet afternoon in Prabhupada's sitting room, Govinda Dasi was bringing Prabhupada his prasadam when Prabhupada spied a baby rat running across the floor. Immediately Govinda Dasi set the tray of prasadam down and tried to catch the rat as it darted toward Prabhupada's desk. Getting up quickly from his seat, Prabhupada also joined excitedly in the chase. Then another rat appeared. When Harinam, visiting from San Francisco, heard the commotion, he came to the door and offered to help. Taking up a shoebox, he began chasing the rats, finally catching them both and letting them loose outside. Later, Prabhupada walked into the room where Gaurasundara and Govinda Dasi were working and told them, "If you kept everything very clean, these rats wouldn't come. If someone is very much attached to his dwelling, then he may take his next birth in that dwelling as a cockroach or a rat. These are sinful living entities, and they are taking their birth because of that attachment." He then asked Sivananda to seal up the cracks in the floor. So once again, you see Srila Prabhupada, philosophy and practicality together in such an extraordinarily rare combination. One minute he's speaking philosophy about how if you're so attached to your home, you can take birth as a cockroach or a rat in your home and continue your attachment. The next minute he's pointing out, seal up the cracks in the floor. So this is our unique heritage in Krishna consciousness. Yukta Vairagya, how to, with great knowledge, use everything expertly in the dynamic service of Lord Krishna. 7. This chapter is the passing away of Vishnu. Tushtu Malaya Vista. Krishna Sakurya Namati.
Krishna Sakurya Namati.
Saste Krishna Vidaya.
Saste Krishna Vidaya.
Swashaman Prayupala.
The Brahmanas give knowledge of the Supreme
and the Kshatriyas administrate the whole land by protecting people so that they can get knowledge of the Supreme. In other words, according to Vedic culture, there is no point simply protecting the bodies of people through governmental arrangement without the actual goal of knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Simply bodily protection, no matter how skillfully done, results in an animal society, a beehive or an ant colony. But when there is orderly government and there is protection by the government so that people can peacefully carry out their lives to attain God realization, then that is a real government. Vishwadeva understood that. He knew that for the common person, unless there's some arrangement, some social arrangement where the common person can gradually make advancement, then the common person has no shelter. Yes, there'll always be transcendentalists who are beyond the ways of material nature and whose self-realization does not depend on what their environment is about. But most people require a bona fide, spiritually dedicated social situation. So in that way, they can make some spiritual advancement. In Vedic civilization, it was the duty of the heads of state to organize yajna for Vishnu. It was their duty to organize great sacrifices. And it was their duty to see that the instructions of the Brahmanas were carried out. And the instructions of the Brahmanas, of course, came from the Vedic literature. Vishnu understood all this with a very compassionate heart. Therefore, he was very dedicated to having Yudhisthira rule the land. Yudhisthira, however, started off the chapter by being in such a state of lamentation. Why should I become king after this huge battle in which so many people were killed just for me to take a post? How can I do this? So Bhishma Dev explained to Yudhisthira that it's your duty, not for your own sense of gratification, but to give protection to the people so that they will make progress in Krishna consciousness. This passing away of Bhishma Dev is an event that was the focus of the entire universe. Not simply the residents of Earth, but the demigods, the devas, in the higher planets, they were also focused upon this situation. Because Bhishma Dev was a universally great personality. We have no idea of that kind of fame. Bhishma Dev's fame was certainly known throughout the three worlds. Everybody in the universe was focused upon his departure. He was such a great personality, and also at the time of his departure, it was expected that he would deliver extraordinary knowledge. So everybody was watching. And when he finally left the world, yes, left the world, because he's going back to Godhead, back to a planet in Vaikuntha, predominated by Parthasarathi, the form of the Lord, specifically for driving the chariot of Arjuna. That was Bhishma Dev's intense meditation. The Lord is Parthasarathi, the chariot driver of Arjuna. So, upon Bhishma Dev's departure, everyone from the heavenly planets showered flowers. These things are common occurrences in Vedic civilization. The demigods, the showering of flowers from other planets. Even right where Bhishma Dev was laying on the bed of arrows, there are so many sages from other planets who gathered there to hear Bhishma Dev speak in his last moments. These things are considered ordinary. Why don't we see the residents of higher planets these days? Because we don't have the qualification. Because people today are so sinful, the demigods do not reveal themselves. What's the point? There's no yajna being performed. There are no sacrifices being performed. So the demigods do not appear before our eyes, and the functions of nature are so erratic. You know, in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the process for peaceful living in this world. There are the demigods, and at the beginning of the universe, the Lord emanated living entities, demigods, and instructions how to perform yajna, sacrifice. And Krishna says, take these instructions for yajna and perform them. This way, be happy. All the necessities of life will come to you without a problem. One thing we need to remember about nature is that all the resources of nature are present in such a way that a human being can take his necessities without much labor. In other words, so much industry, so many factories are not required simply to live a normal human life. Now people will say today, yes, yes, they'll agree. This industrialization is not required because it causes problems, polluting the air, polluting the water. But there is another reason why it is not required, and most people will never think of that. It's because Krishna has purposely designed the universe so that all the resources are there in such a way that you can extract them without much trouble and use them for your needs without much trouble. Our legitimate needs are met very, very easily by the purposeful, intelligent arrangement of Krishna. We can interact with nature in such a way that our necessities easily come to us without extraordinary manufacturing arrangements. Just like when it's cold, you need to keep a little warm. So, the wool of the sheep is there. Not much trouble to get the wool from sheep and make some kind of jumper or some kind of coat. But if you go to the store for a wool sweater, many times the store clerk will tell you, Polar Tech, this synthetic substance is much better. It's lighter, so on and so forth. All that may be true, but what you don't see is the enormous manufacturing processes required to make plastic clothing. You don't see that. You don't see the huge industrial complexes necessary to produce this Polar Tech, which is completely synthetic. All the scientific research that goes into it, all the industrial engineering. Krishna has arranged that we can meet our requirements very easily. And then our brains should go into performing yajna. That is the distinctive characteristic of Vedic culture. The brains are invested not in industrialization, computer technology. The brains are invested in how to perform yajna in the most perfect way. How to perform Vedic sacrifice. That's where the brains of society are. The head on the body, that's the Brahmanas. They know how to perform yajna, how to please Lord Vishnu. And they advise the government, you do like this, you do like that, Vishnu will be pleased, the demigods will be pleased, nature will profusely provide you with all necessities. Well, people have no idea what brains are meant for. If a child tells his mother, I want to be a scientist, I want to be an engineer, oh, the parents are so happy. I remember when I was 9 years old, my mother would give me various books on careers to train me up nicely. She gave me a book about chemical engineering. I would read it and think, oh, I want to be a chemical engineer. Whenever I went to see relatives, I would say, I want to be a chemical engineer. Then she would bring me a book about financial investment banking. I would read that. Oh, I want to be an investment banker. So the parents, they get very happy about this. Oh, this is very good. our child is already selecting a career and focusing his intelligence. That is not human civilization. In Vedic culture, the parents are enlivened when their child wants to know how to please Krishna. It takes intelligence to assimilate the Vedic texts. That intelligence is not there if our brains are caught up in industrialization, commerce. The whole point of Vedic culture is to meet the needs of the body in the easiest way so that your intelligence is available for the real point. You should be reading, contemplating, trying to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada always said that the books he's given us, we take a lifetime to properly honor. Just the books he's given us. So if our intelligence is absorbed in the mundane way of life, that means no brain power left over for what the real purpose of life is. Not only is no brain power left over, but whatever little brain power we have is destroyed by horrible lifestyles. The more you are involved with preaching and teaching Krishna consciousness, the more you are impressed how the horrible lifestyles of people today have destroyed their intelligence. And the people cannot see the relationship between their behavior and what they know. They think it's a complete line or complete wall between how they behave and their knowledge acquiring abilities. We see the opposite. We see that there is a complete correlation, a complete relationship between how people behave and what they know. Srila Prabhupada said so many times, the only hope for this crazy civilization is the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Then, when people read Prabhupada's books, associate with devotees, they begin to realize what their brain is meant for. Otherwise, they don't have a clue what to do with what little intelligence is left. And this is an astounding thing. There's so little left today. People cannot concentrate. Their brains are swimming with television, movies, sense stimuli, anxieties that they're not enjoying enough. They have such little brain power left today. And they say, oh, how can you say that? They're great professors, great scholars, great scientists. They're not great in the Vedic estimation because they use their little intelligence for everything except what it should be used for. Just like Friday at the law, I was having a discussion with Kate's father. He comes regularly. So I asked him, who are you? What are you? And he replied, this is not a scientific question. This is a philosophical question. And I was astonished. To understand what you are you matter or spirit? I explained. That's not scientific. He said, no, that's philosophical. I said, well, then what is scientific? He explained, scientific who means who am I? Well, like everyone else, I'm a monkey. The human being is lured by monkeys. I'm one of them, and that's the scientific answer. So then I said, all right, I'll work with the situation. All right, I said, now, in your monkey body, is there simply chemicals, or is there something else that's you? And he had a very hard time struggling with this. Again and again, I tried to get him to see. And he's a very nice man. He's a lawyer. So I tried to get him to see. It's very practical. Are you the body? Or are you something more than the body? Is your whole existence simply understandable through chemicals? Again, he told me, that's not scientific. You're being philosophical. And where does this distinction and discrimination come from? It's a clever trick by demons, so that instead of saying they don't know about consciousness, they don't know what life is, instead they say that's not a scientific question, it's philosophy. And that way they're spared from admitting that they actually have no scientific understanding. Sometimes people, they're upset when they say that. What do you mean there's no scientific understanding? What do you guys know? These great brains, they talk about so many things. Yes, we point out, they talk about so many things. They talk about everything except what they should talk about. That's because they're empowered by Maya. Prabhupada would see Krishna consciousness even in the atheistic speculations of scientists. He would say they're empowered, they're being empowered by Krishna to absorb their brain in everything except Krishna. All the fascinating, crazy theories they come up with, Prabhupada pointed out, they're actually inspired by the Supersoul. Because they want to forget Krishna, Krishna is inspiring them. Okay, come up with all this, you'll forget Krishna, everyone who follows you will forget Krishna. This way your desire will be fulfilled, their desires will be fulfilled. So Krishna consciousness is so practical and to the point that people many times can't even see that because their brains are so splayed out. They can't see what's right up against their nose. This is the fault of the society they live in. And the society they live in is their fault. Because of their contaminations, they put into government persons who are also contaminated. And they all simply play off one another. Will you elect me? Yes, I'll elect you. Will you do what I say? Yes, I'll do what you say. Are you going to vote for me this time? Yes, I'll vote for you this time. Are you going to do what you didn't do what I said the last time? I'm not going to vote for you. In this way, it's just a barnyard of various animal species trying to elect who's king of the barnyard, who's the prime minister of the barnyard. What actually is going on in the barnyard? That is the Krishna consciousness contribution. We point out what human activity is actually going on. You've got economic development, you've got political arrangements. What are they doing to contribute to something that is of the ultimate benefit? Even they cannot take care of mundane things properly. The point is, when you neglect the Supreme Absolute Truth, you can't even be a proper materialist. So this is why Vishwadeva is so concerned about Yudhisthira taking charge. He had to get Yudhisthira to see beyond his temporary horror at the battle of Kurukshetra. Everyone's children were dead. Gandhari, Dhritarashtra's wife, lost 100 sons. All the children of the Pandavas were dead. Such a ferocious battle between families. After the funeral ceremony of Vishwadeva, performed by Yudhisthira, because Vishwadeva had no son, you'll read how Yudhisthira immediately went to his capital, Hastinapur. You'll hear about that tomorrow. And he was accompanied with Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Together, they consoled Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, his wife. This is Krishna absorbed in all these seemingly earthly affairs, always with his own purpose, consoling Dhritarashtra. After Krishna had arranged the whole battle so that Dhritarashtra would be defeated, you'll hear about Gandhari, who is a great ascetic, a great tapasvini, very austere lady. Actually, Prabhupada in the purport says that Gandhari, although a woman, is no less than Bhishmadeva in character. It's a very, very powerful statement. Now, in the Vedic literatures, there are five women especially celebrated as being extraordinary because of their austerity and chastity. Chastity brings, Prabhupada described that, simply through chastity a woman develops mystic power. So, there's Kunti and Gandhari, also Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, Gandhari, another. So, they're so perfectly executing their female roles that they're described as being tapasthanis, austere persons, as powerful as yogis. These are all deep insights we get from the Vedic literature. We start to understand what it really means to be a person. This people don't understand today. What does it actually mean to be a person? What is the responsibility involved in being a human being? Until we actually hear of the standard, we don't know. We just make up our own way as the days go by. Well, today I feel like doing this. Well, tomorrow I feel like doing that. We're like leaves being blown down the street by the wind. We consult ourselves in every situation. How do I feel today? What's my intuition telling me now? What makes my senses feel good today? What do I feel like doing now? The more you do that, the more society glorifies you. Oh, you're so fortunate. You just move in whatever direction your mind and senses take you. How exalted that kind of lifestyle is. Then they look at a devotee's life and say, you people, you're bound to these rigid devotional schedules and practices. You're bound to these cold, cruel, regular principles. Obviously, your life is very bleak and dark. When devotee ignorance predominates, up is down and down is up. People think the more regulated your life is, the more hellish it is. The more unregulated your life is, the more enlightened it is. This is what we're having to deal with today. Because there are no sages, there are no bona fide intellectuals. Here at the departure of Bhishma Deva, sages from all over the universe were glorifying Lord Sri Krishna. Lord Sri Krishna is also present there. The atmosphere is filled with confidential Vedic hymns being vibrated. And then all the sages return to their respective hermitages, bearing always Lord Krishna within their hearts. Wasn't an unusual thing for there to be hermitages, places where sages had their ashram, alone or with others. That was considered common. Society knew we need these situations. Otherwise, what kind of human society do we have? So the government's job was not only to protect the ordinary people so that they could pursue a lifestyle of gradual elevation, the government also knew its job was to protect the saintly persons, the sages, so they could have a lifetime, an undisturbed life of full-time acquiring transcendental knowledge and teaching that knowledge to others. So in this chapter, you're actually getting a feel for what real human culture is. This chapter is very emotionally pulling and very culturally educational. That's how great Prabhupada's vision is. He would say things like, produce another edition of Western civilization. Produce another version. In his instructions for building the planetarium at Mayapur, Prabhupada said that it'll be such a building that everyone can come and learn all about Vedic culture, philosophy, religion, lifestyle, everything, the whole package. He said not that simply people should come and see it as a museum, but they should learn how to live. They should get knowledge. That was his point. When they come, they just don't look at a museum-like thing and then go away. Of course, there's great benefit in that. But Prabhupada's point was further. They should go away with knowledge. They need to learn. So all these things we are very concerned with. How are we going to develop stages? That is the purpose of this Krishna consciousness effort. To develop sages who can advise others, who can ultimately advise governments without a head on the body of society. There is no peace possible at all. You know about the underworld, the mafia world. They try to have orderly dealings amongst themselves, the big monsters and criminals. They try to have codes of honor. It never works. Similarly, how can that work in so-called regular society? There's really no underworld. Everybody is involved in the same thing. No one is recognizing the authority of the Supreme Court. No one knows how nature works. The process of yajna is outlined in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. No one knows. Krishna said, when the demigods are pleased, they'll cause nature to shower upon you all necessary things. Krishna describes how the devotees of the Lord are released from all sin by offering their food directly to the Lord. Those who don't do that eat only sin. So in that chapter, the Lord explains the reciprocal relationship between the demigods and the beings. And of course, Krishna is always pointing out, if you water the tree at the root, if you worship Vishnu, then all the demigods are automatically taken care of. So this worldview, this view of the universe, people, they don't have any idea. They don't understand that they get billed for the water they use. They get billed for the light they use. They get billed for the food they eat. By nature, that they don't understand. Just as in your city you have a water department or a lighting department, similarly in nature it's the same thing. They don't understand this. They think, oh, this is some kind of mythology. This is some kind of legend. So we point out to them, once you start to acknowledge that consciousness is not a material thing, then you also have to admit that there are probably laws of nature that are different from the laws you know of. There are laws that govern the behavior of conscious entities and their actions and reactions. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching you to see the whole picture. You see matter, you see spirit. You understand the laws that govern both. That is being complete. That is actually being knowledgeable. Once we begin to understand this whole picture, then we can see why it is that all the great sages of the universe gathered for the departure of Bhishmadeva. Why Bhishmadeva was so happy that Yudhisthira was now in charge. Everything is all working together. Nature, government, sages, demigods. And Krishna is there himself. Such a full picture you'll never get anywhere else than from Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the most astonishing thing any sane person really notices. Such a comprehensive, extraordinary, full world is presented to you. Can you actually believe someone sitting down and making all this up? Prabhupada said it again and again. So do you think the Vaishnava Charyas have nothing better to do than make this kind of thing up? The most intelligent persons, the Vaishnava Charyas, you think they just, for some reason, picking all this up? But because our brains are polluted, we become a little skeptical. This is a bit too much. It's a bit too rich, a bit too different. Once, however, we begin to understand our ignorance, then we can really satisfy our thirst with the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very enlivening to know. It's very enlivening to see and to understand. Then we can benefit ourselves and we can benefit others also. Krishna knows how to act perfectly in every situation. He's acting perfectly for Bhishma Dev, letting Bhishma Dev see his form as part of the Sarathi, Charajara of Arjuna. He's acting perfectly for Yudhisthira. He's being the family friend of the five Pandavas. Krishna acts perfectly for all his devotees, for the residents of Vrindavan. He acts perfectly for Mother Yasoda. When Krishna was killing the Kutana, she demon, she smeared poison on her breast to nurse Krishna, thinking she would kill him in that way. And then Krishna indeed accepted her maternal presentation and also began to suck out her life. So Kutana expanded into a form 6 miles long. Now, Krishna did not enlarge himself along with her. Why is that? Because he didn't want to disturb Mother Yasoda's maternal love. If Mother Yasoda had seen Krishna expand in a 6-mile form to cope with Kutana in that way, her maternal love would be disturbed. She would think, oh, Krishna is just a brave personality god. But Krishna remained just a tiny baby and killed Kutana in that way. In this way, keeping the sweetness of Mother Yasoda's relationship intact. Of course, a few times Mother Yasoda would get a glimpse. Balaram and the cowherd boys would accuse Krishna of eating dirt. Krishna would tell his mother, I don't know why these boys are telling me that. They're just making lies against me. Check my mouth, you'll see. So Krishna opens his mouth, and Mother Yasoda sees the entire cosmic manifestation. But then, when Krishna sees it's getting to be too much, it's disturbing her maternal love too much, he shuts it all down. In this way, Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. His loving affairs with the devotees are arranged by the yoga maya internal potency, so that the devotees forget Krishna is the Lord, and Krishna can also forget that he's the supreme Lord. That way, he gets the topmost enjoyment. Sporting as a baby, sporting as a friend, sporting as a boyfriend. All these affairs are arranged by the Lord's energies. Krishna has different energies for everything. External energy for maintaining material nature. Internal energy for maintaining the sporting pastimes of Vrindavan. Krishna knows how to do everything perfectly in every situation. Any questions? Yeah. The Vedas are meant for Brahmins. Brahmanatiti Brahmana. If you want to understand Brahman, then you must be a Brahmana, at least be situated in the mode of goodness. We can understand that even today. So many translations of Bhagavad Gita are out. But who becomes a devotee of Krishna by reading? Krishna says, this is the greatest mystery. But Arjuna, I'm telling it to you, I'm revealing it to you because you are a devotee, as well as my friend. I'm sure you've talked to someone who's read other editions of Bhagavad Gita. You never know they read the book, right? It's amazing. It's indisputable. I have one. My old university mate is corresponding with me. And he heard I was a fan of the Gita. And I wrote that in our 25th class reunion book. So he really contacted me. Oh, you're a fan of the Gita. I love that book. You know, its message of just do your duty, whatever it is. That's what people did. Huh? You'd be shocked if they actually read Bhagavad Gita. They haven't. That's the point. Because it is confidential. Krishna says, because you're my devotee and friend, I'm going to reveal it to you. No one. Before Prabhupada put his Gita in English, no one could reveal Bhagavad Gita. So many editions. That's what Prabhupada writes in the introduction. Not one person became a devotee of Krishna. Not one. do is get confused. That's what confidential means. Unless you follow the instructions on the label and get inside the bottle of honey to taste it, you're just going to be slurping your tongue on the outside of the jar. Confidential means you cannot understand it in an ordinary way. There's, of course, so much more we can say. In the Rig Veda, there's one verse that says the Brahmanas have four ways of speaking. Three are internal within the heart, and one is spoken. In Vedic times, the Brahmanas, they were conversant with all four ways of communicating and hearing sound vibration, three of which are just heart to heart. They're not spoken. But that is not possible in Kali-yuga. That has nothing to do with people's psychic wisdom. That's a totally different. It means there are other vibrations of Vedic knowledge, the Vedic knowledge of the past in other ways, which are not possible in Kali-yuga. So much people don't know. Other questions? Yes. That's a complicated one. There are bhavas on personality, so you have to tread a bit lightly. I mean, your Krishna himself is going to use you to console him. The same Krishna who went to Dhritarashtra before the battle and tried to make peace, he even showed his universal form. I always remember Prabhupada's explanation of Dhritarashtra's position before the battle of Kurukshetra. What he knew and why he couldn't act on what he knew. Prabhupada said, Dhritarashtra said, I know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know I'm wrong, but I cannot control myself. He was so attached to his son, Duryodhana, I can't control myself. And Gandhari, she's such an ascetic, compared to Vishuddha's in character. And you'll read in the last verse of this chapter, 2 days from now, that the great religious king, Maharaj Yudhisthira, executed the royal power in the kingdom strictly according to the codes and royal principles approved by his uncle and confirmed by Lord Sri Krishna. Now, who's the uncle? It's Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra gave him advice how to run the kingdom, how to do everything in the proper political way. We require a transcendental feel of the situation. Just like Vishuddha, he was on the other side. So many things are there like that, therefore we need Prabhupada's purports. Anything else? Yes.
I'm studying an introduction to Dhanam Christian. I remember reading a book years ago that from the fifth of this time here, I learned the Latin Australia, which is a document from Sanskrit, and she described Sanskrit as being the language of the gods, but correct me if I'm wrong, because this from her teaching.
Well, you should. I have to interrupt you, but it's not very important what she says or any of these speculators say. What is your question, irrespective of what she said?
Well, I was actually wondering what she actually said was that Sanskrit originally wasn't a spoken language, and that the Vedas that were received were actually received by children, hearing and or handed down by memory, but that was only the Brahmins who actually had knowledge of Sanskrit, and they were the only ones that could decipher this information. So that's what
I would advise, have you read that book? Forget. Then your life will become very simple. What has the Theosophical Society actually done for the world other than confuse people? You know, there's an expression, what is it, sometimes a little bit of knowledge is worse than having none. You know, these people, they back around concepts like reincarnation, the devas, the Vedic knowledge, the Brahmanism, and it's such a jumble of it, it's best you don't, you know, it's better if they just shut up. That was Prabhupada's point. He said, okay, you want to write your own commentary on the Gita? Just call another book. Why do you call it Bhagavad Gita? You're free to write your own book, but just put another name on it. But no, he said, the fact that they all go to Bhagavad Gita and use that means indirectly they're recognizing Krishna as the authority. Indirectly, oh, Krishna's the authority. We've got to utilize his Gita to launch our own speculations. Indirectly, they're admitting he's the authority. Unless we utilize Bhagavad Gita, then we don't have any credentials. So that's indirect recognition that Krishna is the authority. Otherwise, write your own book, call it something else.
Any news?
Yes. The I have a question. So that we talk too much about being living in the uselessness of technology and things like that, but going back to the primitive age.
Yes. You're right. It's a great problem. They think that without technology as we know it, life becomes very backwards. They don't understand the real potencies and capacities of the human being. Because they have no idea of knowledge and purification. That's the real state of advancement. Knowledge and purification. They have no idea of this. They think that if they're not surrounded by all these gadgets, that then they become primitive. Because they don't know what to do with their brain. They don't know what intelligence is meant for. That's the problem. So if they have difficulty understanding this, I remember one funny way Prabhupada explained it. He said, we are not against the advancement of technology, even though it's suicidal. Yes, it takes a lot of work to get people to see that they don't know what their intelligence is meant for. And you're right, they have these fears. In this book, Intentings, you're right, it's dealing with those fears. As soon as they hear about Vedic culture, Vedic knowledge, they think, oh, you're going to take everything away, we'll be living in the caves again, sitting around fires, chanting some mantras. They don't see what's involved. Their vision is so gross. They don't understand what we, just like when you read about Vishnade, Gandhari, Yudhisthira, you actually get a feel for what a real human being is. They don't have this. They think, without my machines, what will I do? Without my gadgets, what will I do? It'll be the dark ages again. So, much work is required. He has such a big job to do. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.